This is The Guardian.
Looking for your next great podcast? We live in unprecedented times. To make sense of it, what if you could learn from some of the most influential people on the planet? The podcast Tools and Weapons is hosted by Microsoft's Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Every week, he has a candid conversation with guests, including prime ministers and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists. The latest episode features Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though most of us know Bayer for pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science. They're putting digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre. Listen to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
Science Weekly is supported by Rainforest Trust. In honor of this year's Earth Day, we're promoting Rainforest Trust's Brazilian Amazon Fund throughout April. Rainforest Trust is a 501c3 organization, which means that 100% of all money donated goes directly to conservation efforts. The fund has already helped protect more than 6.5 million acres of rainforest habitat, but Rainforest Trust still needs to protect a further 13 million acres to reach its goal. You can help. Donate online at rainforesttrust.org/earthday this April, and your generous gift will be quadruple matched for the Brazilian Amazon.
Last Friday, as volcanologist Helga Torvadottir was working in her office in the Icelandic capital Reykjavik, she started hearing something strange.
It's a bit of a creepy sound and also fascinating. In the afternoon, things got really shaky.
The rumble was just the latest in a series of more than 20,000 earthquakes that have hit the southwest of the country since late October.
I have my cabinet here up in my living room with like wine glasses, and I put the glasses very close to each other so I could have like a bit of a seismic meter in my home, and they start to jingle a little bit. So I was like, okay, this is either getting closer to us or more severe.
The same day, 4,000 residents of the small fishing town of Grindavik were evacuated from their homes. Huge cracks and sinkholes have now appeared in roads, and sulfur dioxide has been detected in the air. For now, the country is waiting and preparing. A devastating eruption could come any day. Perhaps by the time you're listening to this, it's already hit. But volcanologists are also predicting this could be the start of a centuries-long volcanic era. So today we're asking, what's going on beneath the ground in Iceland? And how do scientists predict when and where a volcano is going to blow? From The Guardian, I'm Madeline Finlay, and this is Science Weekly. Helga Torvadottir, you're a volcanologist in Iceland, and we're chatting on Wednesday, and actually there have been some more signs today that an eruption could be imminent, but of course you've been following this develop over the past week, so what's been happening?
So if we just start from the beginning, the big picture, we have two tectonic plates that are opening up here or splitting. We have the North American plate and then the Eurasian plate. And those are two continental crusts that are separating. And we have a landmass here, basically Iceland. And this tectonic boundary, is stretching up on land, which is very unique. So we're basically opening up the crust here. And it roughly opens up 1 centimeter in each direction every year, but it's not gradual. It's like happening in steps, of course. So when we're opening up the crust, something has to fill in. And you want to guess what that could be?
Well, I'm going to guess it's magma.
Yes. So we, of course, want that magma fills in the crust because it's fixing it from within. However, sometimes it's forced up to the surface and then we get an eruption.
Residents and visitors in Grindavík have seen hundreds of tremors. The violent rumbling cracking roads, buildings, and infrastructure.
So on Friday, we got a big shift in this tectonic movement, which resulted in this dike forming, which is a lateral, upright wall of magma, which is, we're not expecting a certain volcano to erupt. We're looking at the ground opening and then we're seeing lava coming up of that. If you look, think in 3D, a wall that goes down several kilometers and it's several kilometers in length, but maybe just 1 or 2 meters wide. But it's still, you know, it's shallow and it could come up at any moment, really.
So most of the time when we imagine a volcano, we're thinking of a kind of, you know, cone-shaped mountain with something spewing out the top. But this really isn't a volcano or an eruption in a traditional sense.
No, that's what is probably very difficult for people that don't know of Icelandic geology to really understand it, because our idea of eruptions are always like this, like you said, cone-shaped mountain and then like the emoji in your phone, basically. But here we have to start somewhere to form this volcano. And this is how it starts, basically. We just rip up the ground, we get an eruption there, left with a crater. And then maybe over a period of hundreds of thousands of years, this happens on and on and off until we basically have formed this emoji volcano.
And what could happen if the magma does reach the surface? What could some of the consequences be?
So, of course, it could just open up anywhere on this 15-kilometer dike. It just depends on where in the crust the magma has the easiest access up through this. But the main threat after that is just lava flows, ruining things. Like in Hawaii, for example, we're not going to get the Eyjafjallajökull 2010 event where we have ash everywhere. We could potentially have an eruption out on the seafloor, but I find it unlikely at this point. But in that case, we would get some ash production. Of course, one of the worst scenarios is a direct impact of the town Grindavík.
Now, fears continue to mount of a possible volcanic eruption in Iceland. There was an immediate evacuation issued on Tuesday after sulfur dioxide was detected, sparking fears of a nearby opening in the ground.
So where are we now? What are scientists and the people monitoring the situation thinking at the moment? Are you thinking there could be an eruption soon, or are we kind of over the hump of that?
Yeah, the time frame is we're very unsure of that. But if something were to happen, I think we will have to give it maybe 2 weeks tops or something like that. We're not in the clear, basically. We could still get an eruption at any moment. The question is, does it need to maybe gather more volume, or is this magma just going to solidify in the crust and do what it should do? So we have to think in 1 week or 2 week period of time, like one day at a time. The people of Grindavík have been returning to their homes for a very short period of time to gather some personal belongings. I know one person that I've been in contact with, and she and her family, they're renting an apartment from some relatives now, and of course they have a very limited amount of their belongings and don't know when they will be able to return, basically. So I think everyone from Grindavík and everyone associated with all this are just taking one step, or one day at a time, basically, now. It's what you can do, really.
Most of us do want to be as far away as possible when things begin to shake. But to understand what might happen and when, scientists have to go to active volcanoes to take their measurements.
It assails all of your senses at once. You're, of course, seeing a spectacle, the gases perhaps roiling out of a boiling lava lake at the bottom of the crater. But there's also a lot of sounds, small detonations, larger cracks like rifles going off, and sometimes a roar like a jet engine. And then you're smelling the gases and they're stinging your eyes at the back of your throat. And maybe even you feel the seismic vibrations through your feet. So it's very, very raw, very visceral and very exciting.
Clive Oppenheimer is a professor of volcanology, filmmaker, and author of Mountains of Fire, The Secret Lives of Volcanoes. He's spent his career visiting the world's active volcanoes, where even when things are relatively safe, they're not exactly calm.
So I worked many years at Mount Erebus in Antarctica, which has a permanent lava lake. It exploded from time to time. Very large bubbles of gas would rupture the lake, and the skin of the bubbles became these bombs, molten lava bombs flying out, and they would sometimes come over the edge of the crater. The chances of being hit were extremely low, but doesn't mean it doesn't give you a bit of an adrenaline rush when you'd hear one of these explosions.
Clive wasn't dodging molten lava bombs for fun. To understand whether an eruption could occur and put other people's lives at risk, it's critical to get a range of measurements to decipher what's going on below.
So we're looking for the signs at the surface that are manifestations of things that might be going on several kilometres below ground. Seismology is arguably the most important technique. This will involve deploying a number of sensitive seismometers around the volcano that pick up the vibrations of often very small earthquakes that wouldn't be felt by a person living nearby. And these earthquakes are generated because if the molten rock is heading up towards the surface, it's got to crack apart the rock of the Earth's crust. And so they can be picked up, they can be triangulated, the location of the earthquakes can be calculated. And so you can actually, in some cases, even see the magma migrating upwards slowly towards the surface. The magma, as it rises, might also cause surface displacement. So there might be uplift of the ground as the magma is pushing up the surface. And that can be detected by GPS instruments. It can also be detected from space using radar satellites. And then the third method is measuring gas emissions. So a few percent of molten rock is made up of dissolved gases, carbon dioxide, water vapor, sulfur, chlorine, fluorine. And those will start bubbling out of the magma, potentially many kilometers below the surface, and they can leak out and arrive out of gas vents at the surface, which we can measure with different kinds of sensors. And we think of them as messengers from the magma. The chemistry of them will tell us perhaps how deep down the molten rock is. But, you know, it still comes down to, when you're trying to protect people from volcanic threat, it comes down to really having to deal with still the uncertainties.
But how are scientists trying to bring down that uncertainty? What are some of the new methods that are being developed that can help us better understand if an eruption could be imminent?
There's a lot of interest in using drones to fly sensors into volcanic clouds that you wouldn't want to go near with a piloted aircraft, or to access areas that you wouldn't want to go to on foot. There's more use of machine learning to process the huge data sets that we collect. But there's a whole other side to it, which is actually just understanding the history of a volcano. And that's good old-fashioned geology, bashing rocks off an outcrop, taking them back to the lab, dating past eruptions so we know how frequently a volcano might have been active in the past, and building a picture from what the volcano has done in the past to what it might do in the future. And we can now look at the nanoscale of tiny little inclusions inside a crystal, inside a piece of pumice, using a synchrotron radiation facility. These are these big sort of particle accelerators.
at the moment, you know, there's activity in Iceland, there's activity in Mexico, in Italy, and perhaps this is because we're better at monitoring or we're just fascinated with volcanoes, but there have been kind of myths online or people suggesting that there seems to be more volcanic activity than normal, and I'd kind of like to bust that myth. I mean, this is a normal amount of activity, right?
Absolutely, yes. There are around 70 volcanic eruptions a year on land. There's a lot of eruptions in the deep seabed that we don't detect. This is a reporting bias. So, of course, if one volcano is in the news, then if another one fires up somewhere else, there's a much greater likelihood that that will be newsworthy because we're talking about volcanoes. We have a catalogue of volcanic eruptions for the last 10,000 years. It's very, very incomplete. And if you look at how many eruptions per year there were, and you plot it on a graph, you see it just goes up and up over time. And this is just the result of reporting becoming more extensive. And you can even see, if you look at the 20th century, you can see that if you just took it at face value, you'd think that there were less eruptions during World War I and World War II, which wasn't the case at all. But there were, you know, better things to be reporting on and taking note of and documenting at that time. That's what's going on at the moment.
And Clive, you know, what's happened in Iceland has kind of caught everyone's eye. And there is something about volcanoes that really makes them intriguing, I think, for us. What do you think it is about them that we're drawn to?
You know, I always remember I've got a friend who is, she's a weather forecaster in Iceland at the Icelandic Met Office. I always remember her telling me there was an eruption, I think, of Hekla, and they put out an aviation hazard warning. And instead of kind of steering around, the planes were coming in so the pilot could have a look at the spectacle of this ash cloud. So there is something very exciting about just the raw energy, the raw spectacle of a volcanic eruption. And there's something, particularly when you see the lava, and it's so dynamic and shape-shifting. It's like looking into the embers of a fire, which is also captivating. Or for me, it's, you know, like looking at a stained glass window when the light's really pouring through it. It's just something that really, really gets you and is hard to draw yourself away from. And as I mentioned at the beginning, just this multi-sensory experience as well. If the gases that are assailing you don't make you flee, it's very captivating to watch this primeval force of nature, force of the earth at work.
I'm quite a nerd, so I like the science behind all of this, but it's a mixed feeling of understanding them and admiring them. You, as a volcanologist, you always want an eruption to study, of course, but at the same time, you don't want an eruption because it causes harm in most cases. But yeah, it's just, we have to understand this because we want to be one step ahead of nature, try to figure out what's her next move before she does anything that could harm us.
Helga, it's been so fascinating, and I hope that you and everyone in the area stay safe as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Helga Torvadottir and Clive Oppenheimer. If you want to hear more about their work, you can visit Helga's Instagram. She's at geology_with_Helga. And Clive's book is Mountains of Fire, The Secret Lives of Volcanoes. Before you go, I want to let you know that The Guardian is expanding its home delivery service across the UK, including Manchester, Brighton, Bristol, and Edinburgh. And for a limited time, you can get 25% off. So relax, put your feet up, and get The Guardian and Observer delivered right to your door. To check whether your area is eligible and to subscribe, visit theguardian.com/autumndelivery23. And that's it for today. This episode was produced by me, Madeline Finlay, and Tom Glasser. It was sound designed by Tony Onuchuku, and the executive producer is Ellie Bury. We'll be back on Tuesday. See you then.
This is The Guardian.
Looking for your next great podcast? We live in unprecedented times. To make sense of it, what if you could learn from some of the most influential people on the planet? The podcast Tools and Weapons is hosted by Microsoft's Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Every week, he has a candid conversation with guests, including prime ministers and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists. The latest episode features Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though most of us know Bayer for pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science. They're putting digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre. Listen to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.